The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues. Today's host is the senior editor for Financial Sense, Chris Sheridan.
One of the most important political issues facing Europe this year will occur on Thursday, June 23rd, when British citizens head to the polls to decide whether, after 45 long years, if the UK should exit the EU. We are joined today by two leading analysts at Global Risk Insights, Michaela Sorensen and Nandini Rao, to debate the case for and against a so-called Brexit, and to understand why, as many are stating, that this is one of the most important macroeconomic issues facing the world today. Michaela, let's start with you. You believe that the UK should leave the EU. Why is that?
Well, Chris, I think so because I think an exit from the EU would save Britain a lot of the downside, while diplomacy could save most of the upside for Britain. I think one of the topics that is especially acute in this debate, and which I think points to Brexit as the favorable outcome, is the excessive regulation that the EU is imposing on business in the UK. And this is a burden which is especially felt by small and medium-sized businesses, which constitute most of the UK's economy, in fact. A second and equally important reason why I think this is the case is that all the problems with the mismatch between the North and the South in the EU and the recurring debt problems in Greece, but in other countries in the southern periphery as well, I think these are not going to solve themselves. And I think it's naive to think otherwise. And it is going to be a theme that's going to come back in the, if not short term, then certainly medium term. It might not tear the union apart necessarily, but it will change the structure of it either to greater union or to a more decentralized union. And I think it's only natural for the UK to step out at this point because it's not interested in a closer union. And this, in a sense, would only be the first step to a more decentralized union in the case where that's the outcome.
Nandini, explain why you believe Britain should remain in the EU and not vote to leave on June 23rd.
Well, there's a very old proverb which says that united we stand and divided we fall. And I think if the UK does leave, then it's not a fall. The near-term consequences, domestically at least, would be very severe in economic terms. And this could have negative spillover effects on the UK's growth long-term. And also, by leaving the EU, the UK may not only suffer from negative economic effects, but it may also lead to questions about the EU's future, as the approach to exit might result in other countries clamoring for their own referendum. This is likely to be the case in France if the National Front wins. So this could lead to questions about the durability of the union. And the loss of the single market would have a lot of adverse effects on trade, as the EU accounts for nearly half the UK's exports and a lot of FDI. And lots of these two factors would be particularly worrying because the UK has a large current account deficit. And while the Brexit supporters have argued that by leaving they could soon renegotiate a free trade agreement, this may not be in the EU's interest, as it would be setting a bad precedent. So it might encourage other countries to want to leave and then do the same. And also negotiating the terms of the agreement would be quite time-consuming. So in the interim period, there would be a lot of uncertainty, which could pull down growth while pushing up inflation, as the Bank of England Governor Mark Carney highlighted in his report yesterday.
Michaela, what is your response to some of the points that Nandini just made? You know, she's basically saying united we stand, divided we fall, and that there would be a lot of negative effects on UK's growth, given that the EU is such a large trade partner with the UK. And when you look at both imports and exports, what are your thoughts on some of the points that she just raised?
Okay, well, to deal with the adverse effect on GDP growth first, I think in the spirit of Iceland, there might be some severe short-term effects, but I think in the medium to long run, it will benefit the UK, not least since China and the US are respectively the second and the fourth largest trade partner with the UK. And there's no reason why they shouldn't keep up trade as it has been. And I think the EU needs the UK just as much as the other way around. So this sort of argument that there will be no interest from the part of the EU to secure an agreement with the UK, I don't really buy it. Furthermore, one of the first points was how it could trigger further fragmentation of the union. I think this is quite interesting since I use it as an argument as well, but to further my point. And I guess it comes down to what you think the EU is really for, or who you think it's for. A recent Ipsos Mori survey found that pretty much all European countries, their populations thought that they should have the opportunity to vote yes or no to the EU, just as Britons are able to in June. And I think this taps into this Euroscepticism that's been rising in several countries. You know, there's a sense that the EU is not really for the people of the European Union. And I just find it a little bit staggering that arguments of technicality, in a sense, and the short-term adverse financial effect are allowed to trump notions of sovereignty and identity, which the EU without those things in support are not really viable, in my opinion.
Nandini, how would you like to respond to that? Basically, that the short-term effects, both of you would agree, are present and there will likely be some adverse consequences at first. But in the long term, Michaela is arguing that this will be good for the UK and that it really perhaps is the case that the EU is fragmenting on its own, given the North-South divide, the refugee crisis, and some of the other factors. How would you respond to some of those points?
Well, starting with the fact that the short-term effects would just be in the short term, I don't think this is quite true because, firstly, leaving the UK would have a negative effect on the sterling, so it would probably depreciate because there'd be a loss of confidence. And a large part of the capital goods that are used for manufacturing goods here are imported, so that would lead to less capital goods being imported, which could adversely affect productivity, and this would have a long-term impact on growth. And also, taking the last point that Michaela mentioned about the EU having a negative impact on the UK's identity, leaving might do that as well, because if the UK leaves, then there might be a second Scottish referendum on independence, because there's more people in Scotland who are in favour of remaining in the EU than there are in the rest of the UK. And also the SNP leader said that they would definitely campaign for another referendum if the UK left. And with the point about the trade agreement, the UK is likely to be in a stronger position to negotiate trade agreements if it remains within the EU and applies with other countries in the bloc, which all have similar aims, rather than if it applies alone. And the US, which is the largest trading partner of the UK after the EU, they have said that if the UK leaves, then it would go to the back of the queue in negotiating FTAs with the US in future. And also the US has stopped negotiating FTAs as single countries.
Michaela, those are some pretty strong points that Nandini just made in terms of the real impacts that could happen economically and with trade treaties between different nations. Also, she mentioned the fact that there are going to be some ripple effects that we could see in terms of the Scottish referendum. If the UK votes to leave the EU, then that might actually further fragment the UK with the Scottish referendum, given that there is a lot of support in that region for remaining. What are your thoughts on some of the points that she just mentioned?
Well, first of all, I will acknowledge that the negative consequences will probably materialize, but I maintain that they will be rather short-lived. And again, it's not unprecedented that countries almost appearing as if they're part of the EU have simply different agreements. You have Iceland, Norway, and Liechtenstein. which are part of the European Economic Area. You have Switzerland, which is part of the European Free Trade Association. And you have Turkey, which has a customs union agreement with the EU. I don't think it's too far fetched to say that the UK would be able to secure some form of a free trade agreement within the 2 years that they have to complete the exit. And depending on those terms of that agreement, you know, Scotland, a referendum in favor or against Scottish independence wouldn't happen the day after the Brexit vote anyhow. There would be an opportunity for everyone to just see what can be hashed out in that time. And as I mentioned before, I don't think that the EU would be totally unwilling to enter that negotiation. I think it's pretty obvious that there's a demand among not just the UK, but other nations as well for a different union, a different set of agreements. And I think this could be really conducive first step towards rehashing some of the underpinnings of the union.
Nandini, what are your thoughts on that? That this might actually be a benefit for the EU as a whole if some of these countries were able to renegotiate their trade deals or their relationship to the EU, that this isn't necessarily a death knell for the EU or for the UK, but that this would be a matter of coming back to the drawing board?
Well, in some senses, it might be a nail in the coffin for the EU, because I think by remaining within the EU, the UK is in a stronger position to work towards a reformed Europe, because it's one of the largest economies in the EU. So leaving would have a negative impact on the rest of the bloc. By staying within the Union, it would have the necessary clout to influence regulations in its favour and also favourable trade terms. And also with the point about the Scottish referendum, I think as soon as there was a Brexit decision, then that would be the next thing that would be priced in by markets. So there would be a lot of uncertainty surrounding that. And also an interesting thing with the Ipsos Mori poll that Michela talked about before, it says that the majority think that if Britain left the EU, other countries would follow.
Nandini, do you think that this process could be, as Michela argues, that this could be handled in a political, diplomatic manner in terms of renegotiating some of the agreements over time, over a period of months or years, such that some of these other nations would also be able to secure arrangements that are in their benefit?
Well, doing that would involve a lot of uncharted territory. No country has effectively left the EU. Greenland left its precursor, but that was years ago. Also, Greenland was a much smaller economy and its contribution to the EU was a lot smaller as well. And also, none of the countries that Michela mentioned, Norway and Switzerland, they don't have as favourable terms of trade as the countries within the EU. So Switzerland still has to accept the migration policy. So that might be the price imposed by the EU on the UK if it decides to leave. And Norway, in some sense, has to pay for access to the market.
Putting aside your own personal beliefs on whether or not you think the Brexit should happen, whether or not British voters should vote for or against leaving the EU, what do you think the chances are that we will see a Brexit come this summer, June 23rd? And Michela, let's start with you.
It's a tough call because the poll is very even. I think many of the undecided might stick with what they know and vote for. The latest I read from Ladbrokes, the betting agency, was that odds favor the stay-in vote as well. So speaking now in the moment, I think it looks like a stay vote.
And Nandini, what are your thoughts on, practically speaking, whether or not we will see a Brexit?
Well, I think it's really close to call as well. So yesterday's poll was quite close. And I think it depends on what the voter turnout will be like. So most young people support staying with the EU, and so do a lot of Labour voters, but a lot of Conservative voters are in the pro-Brexit camp. And one thing that could tip the balance in the favour of Remain is that the IMS is releasing its paper just about a week before the decision. So I think that could have a major impact, because they're saying that the UK would be better off staying. And also that going to be one of the major forecasts that are going to come out in that time, because there'll be a blanket ban on UK politicians talking about the referendum that'll come into place 28 days before the vote.
Can I just add to that, that I think the way the EU is handling its affairs right now might maximise the chance of a stay-in vote. As you might have read, the Greece bailout talks have been deferred. The EU has declared that it's not going to discuss that until after the Brexit vote, because it knows that, you know, renewed focus on this periphery issue with excessive debt in periphery countries is dynamite for this Brexit debate. Further, there is a paper suggesting joint military forces suggested by Germany, I believe, and that's not going to be discussed either until after the Brexit vote. So I think conditions, given the facts, are quite favourable to a stay-in vote, but I also think it's a little bit artificial that it is that way.
Nandini, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I just wanted to add that there's a lot of international support for the UK staying within the EU as well. That 28 ban just applies to politicians within the UK, so it doesn't apply to world leaders like Obama and other politicians.
So I would take it, given what both of you just said, that the EU is maximizing the chances of a stay-in vote by delaying Greece bailout and some other hot topic, hot button issues. And also, like you said, Nandini, that the international community is also casting its favor for a stay-in vote, that if a Brexit did indeed happen, if the vote were to be to leave, that would perhaps be quite disruptive, given the amount of pressure for a stay-in.
Yeah, for sure. I think especially the financial market reaction would be quite severe in the short run, as mentioned, because I think expectations and the international community believed in a stay vote.
Nandini, is there anything you would like to say?
I was just going to say, to some extent, some uncertainty has been priced in because the pound has been dropping, but obviously the full extent probably won't be known until after the vote. So it could definitely be a shock to markets, which could have long-term impact.
I think the Bank of England has attributed about half of that depreciation to uncertainty relating to the vote.
If British citizens were to vote to stay in, and let's say some of these other issues were to come back up and fan the flames of wanting to leave the EU again in the future, whether or not that is issues with Greece, peripheral nations, the ongoing refugee crisis, and some of the other concerns, going back to something that you said, Michaela, as well, is the amount of excessive regulations, for example, a lot of these concerns that are driving people to want to leave the EU. If voters did vote to stay in, what is to prevent another referendum from happening again? Is there a moratorium on when another referendum can be held after a vote is cast? Do either of you have any information on that regards?
If I may start, I don't have any information in that regard, but I do think that even if it doesn't result in a Brexit, I think this whole process has been a warning as to what happens when the voter bases in individual member countries become so alienated from what the EU stands for. And I think there's going to be a greater willingness to be a bit flexible about some of these things that member countries care a lot about. And I know for one thing that Denmark has been observing the development with the UK quite closely, because some of the terms in the agreement that Cameron secured back in February are quite interesting from a Danish and arguably Scandinavian perspective as well. So I think this could, if not trigger more referenda, it could probably trigger a bit more flexibility.
Nandini, do you have any thoughts on whether or not another referendum could be held by the UK if there is no Brexit come June 23rd, or as Michaela said, perhaps by other countries?
Well, I think what happens in the UK depends on how close the result is likely to be. So if it's really close, if the Remain camp just win marginally, then I think that could pave the way for future referendums. But if there's a comfortable win, then probably not. And also, I think no one would want to see another lot of uncertainty for the next few years to come. And the next UK elections are about 4 years down the line. So it would depend on whether it was the same establishment then, or the Labour Party was in power, then Jeremy Corbyn is in favour of staying with the EU, so it would depend on the political situation at that time. And about the effects in other countries, I think if the National Front wins in France, then Marine Le Pen has expressed her willingness to hold a referendum. And there's also some political parties with similar feelings in some of the other countries. Yes, I think it's a lot depends on how Greece progresses with its bailout talk.
I also think it depends a lot on the immediate fallout from the vote on the 23rd of June, regardless of whether it becomes a yes or no. I think lots of countries and lots of Eurosceptic parties are going to take their cues from that.
Did either of you have any parting thoughts for our audience before we go?
Well, although Michela and everyone else supporting Brexit has said that the status quo is not ideal, I just want to say that an exit is by no means the best alternative and could be a lot worse.
To that, I might add that I think there's broad agreement among most EU member countries and certainly in the UK that the EU has strayed far from its original idea of being a trade agreement and a free sort of trade union. And I think it would benefit the union to maybe regress a bit and become less political and more trade oriented again.
Yes, I definitely agree with that.
There you have it. Both of our guests agreeing on one thing. So I want to thank you both, Michela Sorensen and Nandini Rao, who once again are leading analysts at Global Risk Insights, for joining us today on this debate of whether or not the UK should exit the EU after 45 years. And of course, I think many of us can understand that this is a very important issue, not just for the UK or for the EU, but for the world as a whole. And as I said in the opening, many are referring to this as one of the most important macroeconomic issues, certainly of this year, facing the globe. So with that said, thank you very much for coming on to FS Insider, and we look forward to reading more of your work and perhaps having you on the show again.
Thanks. Been a pleasure, Chris.
Okay.
So on the for side for Brexit, Michela Sorensen argues that EU regulations are overreaching. They're costly. She cited the example of loud lawnmower noises being banned, I believe, in the UK. So a lot of unnecessary and perhaps intrusive regulations. And she argues that the EU has stepped away from its original charter and goals and is now becoming more of a behemoth instead of really focusing on the economics of trade and commerce for which it was originally intended. And to that, Nandini Rao argues that the trade linkages between the UK and the EU are very strong, that if you look at the amount of imports and exports between the EU and the UK, there is a strong amount of trade taking place between those two regions. And to leave the EU at this point would have adverse consequences, and that no amount of diplomacy would be able to reverse those ill effects. And although both of them believe that the short-term effects will be disruptive to the markets and the global economy, given that the UK has remained in the EU now for 45 years, they really disagree on the long-term consequences. And of course, Michela believes that in the long term, this will be good for the UK, and that the EU is really destined to either break up or to experience problems over the long term, given the divides that we see between the North and the South and the periphery countries and the core countries. The refugee crisis, of course, is a major issue as well. And Nandini really believes that the UK leaving would be a catalyst, that it would be perhaps a spark that would further disintegrate the EU, that the ripple effects from this to other countries are unknown, and it could end up eventually leading to the complete breakup of the EU. So it really depends on where you think the EU is headed. That seems to be a main point. If you think the EU is going to be breaking up regardless and that its fate is somewhat doomed, given the problems that we see today, then in that case, it would seem that it is in the UK's long-term interest to sever ties from the EU. If you do not believe that the EU is destined to break up and that there could be some means of renegotiating ties and trade treaties, then in that case, the UK could remain and use this as leverage for renegotiating a lot of those deals. So that seems to me to be where it really comes down to. And as both analysts noted, it's really hard to try to determine which way the vote is going to go. It's very close. It's pretty much split 50-50 at this point. So as far as the impact goes, there is a lot of uncertainty there. And at this point, given that the international community is really behind staying and against a Brexit, and a lot of other political leaders are certainly trying to do everything they can to prevent that, if we did indeed see a Brexit come June 23rd, both analysts thought that this would be very disruptive for the markets. So this is going to be, as we noted, one of the most important political issues that we're going to have to monitor going forward this year, coming June 23rd. Be sure to listen to our next broadcast. It's going to be a very in-depth, comprehensive one with Andrew Zatlin at Moneyball Economics. He is going to talk about the trends that he's seeing in the VIX index, why he thinks we're probably going to be looking at a mild recession this year in the fourth quarter based on a number of things that he highlights. And then also what we're seeing with the smart money in terms of George Soros and some others like Goldman Sachs as they're warning on the stock market. So you don't want to miss that broadcast airing next. I'm Chris Sheridan. You're listening to FS Insider at FinancialSense.com.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.